Welcome to the Werewolf Den, where we do a deep dive into the core concepts and principles behind White Wolf's Werewolf the Apocalypse.
I'm Amelin.
And I am Ryan. Welcome to the Werewolf Den. I was going back through and listening to some of our old tribal episodes, and part of my brain was like, ugh, this is so basic. This is so ground level. And I know it wasn't, but after doing this for so many years, like, we've thought about this for months and months on end. And I was like, what would be a good way to go back and kind of revisit some of the tribal episodes and keep it fresh and interesting while exploring a little bit deeper? And I thought, you know, why not just do kind of a deep dive on some of the iconic NPCs of Werewolf the Apocalypse? It's a great way to explore why these people are part of what tribe they're a part of, what makes them tick, and also to kind of expand on that, how is a player and a storyteller to utilize these resources within your game? Mm-hmm. And if we're going to do this, what better figure to start off with than King Albrecht, the High King of the Garu, most iconic Silverfang to ever be a Silverfang?
Exactly. So, for those of you who are uninitiated, King Albrecht is very frequently described as the Kane, basically, of Werewolf the Apocalypse. He is the big head honcho, big kahuna. A lot of the biggest lore traces back to him in some way. But as we will talk about, those parallels with Kane are very much for literary purposes, but not actually within story details.
Yeah, he's obviously not the Kane of werewolves.
Mm-hmm.
There's been like 10,000 years of
garlands. Treated as such.
He's the biggest figure, right? Mm-hmm. He's obviously not the progenitor and stuff. But yeah, for those of you who didn't start in the way back machine, you know, W20. If you look up references to King Albrecht, he is literally the, like, archetypal character that, you know, Susie wants to play a werewolf, and so she's going to make a Silverfang named Jonas Albrecht, and literally Albrecht is the draft character for, you know, you use athletics to jump, you must assign a primary stat block, and, you know, it's, yeah. So within W20, there's really nothing here. It's all entailed in all of the old stuff.
And unfortunately, if you're trying to get a summation of all of the details about him, get ready to spend a lot of money and do a lot of digging and still probably come up short.
Right. And there are lore resources you can look to. Lazar of Stygia does a pretty good job of it. And again, that is not the point of what we're doing here. We're not here to sort of spell out the lore in a Galliard-style telling. We're here to kind of explore these deep ideas and concepts. So if you're looking for lore, there are much better places to do it. As it comes up, we'll touch on it. But yeah, we're here to kind of roll around in the mud with it.
We're here more to take the commonplace understandings and talk about how to apply those commonplace understandings.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, for those of you who started off with W20 or didn't read a bunch of different Garu novels, King Albrecht started off as kind of this exiled lord. He slayed this great worm beast, and his dad was, or his grandfather, I think, was probably a little corrupt and was kind of jealous of it, that Albrecht had killed this thing.
It kind of comes off a little bit. I remember rereading and going through it and listening in on stuff and being like, this almost reminds me of, like, Zeus with Kronos.
Yeah.
And honestly, that's a strangely good parallel to go with Albrecht. Albrecht is incredibly flawed, but he's the guy in charge now.
And so, yeah, he goes through this fallen exile kind of thing where he's exiled from the sept, and he ends up in New York, and a bunch of Bonar save his life. And he turns to drink, but eventually he becomes a warder of a cairn, and things start getting a bit hotter and heavier. And basically, he is the archetypal Silverfang in that sense, where he's not a genius. In fact, in his stat block, his intelligence is 2. But he is an Arun, and he's really good at what he does. I like to liken it to King Albrecht is like Michael Jordan, right? He's not Phil, the coach, who's coming up with all the plans. He's just the dude who you can put in any, you know, conflict situation, and he's going to come out on top.
He's got plot armor.
He's an Aroon, and he's really, really good at being an Aroon, and that's kind of where his strength lies. While he's got, a ton of leadership, he's way better at punching stuff than he is at inspiring people. And I think that's fine, because the fact that he's really good at punching stuff is kind of why he's inspiring.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a great way to sort of think of King Albrecht, especially as we're always railing against Silverfangs aren't Ventru. It's not that he's got all the fingers and all the pies and he's got a plan for every situation.
He's just really good at what he does and lives up to the expectation of what he's supposed to be.
Yep. He's a hero. There's a villain, he fights the villain and wins. Ta-da!
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, he's a Silverfang.
Now, some of you may have come in and noticed, our description sounds very unflattering when we put it into those sorts of words, but at the same time, still very workable. That's one of the great things about World of Darkness. It allows for multiple interpretations. One of the favorite things that I've ever come across was when Ryan was, restudying up on King Albrecht for this episode, and he comes to me and is like, I think this guy's a himbo. And I was like, I will allow this. I will allow this interpretation.
Like, the thing that he's good at is beating stuff up. And he just sort of falls face first into plot. And if he does lose, it's because of trickery or deceit or cheating. Like, he never loses in a fair fight, because if he's not got the odds stacked against him with some weird trick or magic or something, he's going to beat the crap out of you.
So, now that we've given you a bunch of lore in this Not About Lore video...
But I still think this is a good way to sort of conceptualize how your character views him. Because again, he's not a Ventru, right? He's not the greatest... He's not Aragorn. He's not this fantastic king, right? He's really good at beating the crap out of anyone that gets in the way. And his leadership style, again, he has 5 dots of leadership, but his social stats are nowhere near his physical stats. Like, I kind of conceptualize his leadership style as he knows how not to piss people off. Sometimes he's a little arrogant, but he's never one of those, bosses that makes you want to be a Shadow Lord, right? He might not have the plans or the brains to come up with the solutions. But he's going to beat the crap out of it, and that's kind of going to get him through the day. Because again, he's a Silverfang. He's got plot armor. Like, it's a good way to visualize him as a player. Because you're not looking for this, you know, pompous Ventru bastard that's going to, look down his nose at you. He kind of does it a little bit, but I think that's, again, the authors just sort of conceptualizing him in this sense. Like, within his story and within his sheet, he's a himbo. He's going to beat the crap out of the opposition, and you want to win. So it's cool to have Michael Jordan on your side. Doesn't matter really how he behaves or operates. He scores enough points to win the game and get the rings. It just works.
Now that said, you absolutely do not have to run with our he's a himbo interpretation, despite how fun we think it is. And this is where we're going to actually get past all of this lore stuff that we've spent nearly 10 minutes talking about now. And in this not lore video. And actually talk about now how to use King Albrecht in your system. Now, this is a huge deal. Like I said, he's kind of the Kane of werewolves.
He's a rank 6. Mm-hmm. He's a legend. Nobody becomes legends.
Now, there's 3 possible avenues to experience King Albrecht. The avenue of the player that knows and therefore has an interpretation and can filter that interpretation through whatever character they are playing. The storyteller, who is responsible for bringing him in, playing him, and having him react to your players, and then the player that just doesn't know and has to learn on the fly. And we're going to focus first on that last category, because when you're dealing with any sort of canon material, you need to be considerate of the fact that not everybody has the resources to go out and learn all of this stuff, not just financially, but time-wise.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a lot of the people I run games for are parents with special needs children, or people who have to work multiple jobs just to get by, and therefore, like, this is, like, the one reprieve that they even place of rest that they have. They don't have time to go out and learn all sorts of this lore. They have to just take it as they come. So, if I just drop King Albrecht in and don't foreshadow, don't do anything to prep the character for that, they're gonna just be like, who's that guy?
Mm-hmm. Even if they've done their, you know, full due diligence and read the entire book, all they know about King Albrecht is you use strength and athletics to make a jump. Like, it doesn't tell them anything about this guy or his place within the
Senate. You made an NPC with the same name as the sample character.
That seems kind of boring, storyteller.
So, one of the first things that you're going to need to do, especially when introducing big pieces of lore via an NPC like Albrecht, is foreshadow, and give players opportunities to learn and know who this character is before you bring them in. Now, with a high-ranking character like this, chances are, like, for me, I'm not going to bring in a character. There's pretty much two situations I'm going to bring in a character like Albrecht. One is not going to apply to the situation because I'm not going to have new players playing at a level where King Albrecht is going to come in for a one-shot. That's going to be players that I know have a great deal of experience and know a great deal about the game and already know a great deal about the system so that we can go, and I can make these references and they can start off running. But I can potentially bring him in for a campaign, and that's where you're going to encounter that person that doesn't know him. You've got a campaign to do this. You can spend that time seeding stories about who this NPC is via your other NPCs and via your player characters. You can spend that time leaving hints and clues and showing all sorts of different ways to foreshadow that, oh, maybe this guy is going to come in. And then the player's going to be like, who's that? And then people are going to be like, you don't know who that is? What's wrong with you? And then that's going to allow for your chance to bring that in so that the player can learn organically about what that is and isn't just going to be blindsided with, here's this big thing, you need to care about it.
And along with that, King Albrecht is such a huge figure, he's not just going to pop in for tea and crumpets. Like, there's certainly going to be some plot that's taking place within your game. And, you know, if it's a Cairn build, maybe if you're near New York City where he's hanging out, it would stand to reason he might pop over for that. And so whatever the players are doing, you know, that plot aspect is the focus here. You're just adding extra weight by being like, oh, and the Mac Daddy of all Garu is going to show up and pitch in.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's a good way for those players who have no idea who this guy is to kind of frame it. What we're doing is important, and so the most important Garu of them all is going to come and lend his might, really.
How I would honestly introduce this is a Cairn build is honestly a perfect route to do this. Players who are out seeking their allies and stuff like that, and they're going to start going to other sets and petitioning, come and help us, come and help us build this, we are doing this great thing, and other SEPs have other things to do, and Cairn builds are risky.
Mm-hmm.
They could lose people by sending that over. And so, how I would do it is by players can, like, seed this, and then maybe you have a player that's like, well, I want to get to this person. You can't get to this person. Fuck you. You can't get to Albrecht. Or maybe you don't. Maybe you have somebody who's like, oh, maybe I could pass that on to Albrecht, and players can be like, who's that? And it's like, oh, you don't know who that is? Oh, don't worry about it. Blah, blah, blah. Or, oh, you don't know about that? Well, maybe a little bit of information here. I'm going to, like, school you for, like, half a minute and move on because it's not necessarily important. And then just kind of, like, seed, like, oh, maybe we'll get this information to him. Maybe we'll get this information to him. And then have it where, oh, shit, the Cairn build is starting to maybe fumble a little bit. Uh-oh, Things aren't working out. Things aren't going well. The players are trying their best, but their roles are just sucking. And just, they need just a little something. And then King Albrecht shows up and makes a BAM! Makes an impact. And now the players have a second breath to them because this Big Mac Daddy showed up. And they're like, all right. And the players get up. And then they have that new inspiration. They have bonuses to, like, their dice rolls because King Albrecht is, like, doing something to bolster their morale because he is such a great leader. And they're inspired and they're ripping through things. And I'm not saying that he's gonna save them, but he's gonna be that inch that turns the tide if the players are starting to be like, uh-oh, this isn't going too well. Oh god, oh god, oh god, oh god. And gives them that boost.
Yeah, two things I want to add to that. The first is that within this example, you've got someone who doesn't know who Albrecht is. It can be useful to have NPCs kind of spell that out, but exposition is exposition, right? In this instance, having this figure show up and do something to draw that attention and sort of inform that perspective helps a lot. A new player is going to remember it a hell of a lot better if they're getting something like that rather than the tale singer is telling them about King Albrecht's deeds. Because, yeah, even within the lore itself, it's a lot of he did this, then he did this, then he did this, and it's a little dry.
Let the players experience the grandiose of it without robbing them of the spotlight, but giving them that bolster, uplift them with this character.
That was the second thing I wanted to point out, that him showing up and laying the smack down is great. But again, the focus should be on the players. So, yes, let's all accept Michael Jordan is going to score more points than any of us. But if he's scoring 30 points and we need 35 points to beat the team in this game,
then that focus needs to be on those 5 points.
Right. The focus is on the players and what they're doing. And the fact that you've got Michael Jordan, who's laying dunks and hitting threes all over the fucking place and just being Michael Jordan, right, is inspiring. Huh. This isn't quite as Herculean a task because Michael Jordan's on our team. That's peachy, but we still have to contribute. So again, he shows up and, you know, you don't even have to make it a gift thing. Just be like, oh, you all see that Michael Jordan is on your team. You have a bit of a moment to catch your breath because he's taking the heat. You all know he's scoring points for you. You feel like you've got a chance here. Regain some willpower, do whatever. Like, reinvigorate the players to bridge that gap. You know, we don't just want King Albrecht to show up and bat everything away, and so the players are just sitting there going, yay, good job.
That's why I would say if the players are rolling well in that scenario, if the players are rolling well and doing all of this good stuff, don't have King Albrecht show up. Don't have him steal his thunder. Have him show up later to congratulate them.
Mm-hmm. So moving on from that, the category that I am most interested in talking about is from the player's perspective. The informed player who knows about Albrecht, how to work this in, how to add it to the game, even if King Albrecht never shows up within your campaign. Knowing about him and having an opinion about that can certainly inform Garu politics, right? Mm-hmm. He's the iconic Silver Fang. And if people like to drag on the Silver Fang, well then, here's the dude that we kind of need to take our munition from in that instance. The first thing I'll say is that the Garu, of course, are an oral society. And King Albrecht is a monolithic figure. Chances are you've never actually seen him, especially if you're starting off as a Kleoth and low rank. Like, it wouldn't make sense for you to have been with him while he's doing something.
That's a very special campaign that allows for that.
Yeah, we're talking about starting off at high rank, that sort of thing. But for your average campaign, especially in one where King Albrecht isn't likely to show up unless you go searching for him, being aware that you can play with that oral tradition. That someone from the Silverfang is going to tell a very different story than a Shadowlord would, right? Or a Bone Gnar. And so you can use this to kind of spin things a little bit, if you want, to kind of freshen it up. But knowing those basic things about King Albrecht, you know, the fact that he is a himbo. He's a fighting guy, and he just beats the crap out of everyone that stands against him. And everyone that stands against him is irrevocably worm-tainted. Mm-hmm. Like, it just happens that way. There's no black, or there's no gray. It's all black or white. Like, yeah, you can use this to inform your perspective and come into that with a more nuanced or exaggerated idea about the use of kings within the Garu Nation. What is the place of this absolute authority? Do we need it? Looking at the way things go with septs and pacts often working on their own, yeah, there's certainly an argument to be made for centralizing authority. If there's one person who's telling everybody what to do, well, then we can kind of focus our efforts here rather than kind of scrabbling around trying to put out small fires. So being aware of that, yes, he is a king, and he's not a brainy guy, he's a punchy guy, but maybe there is a place for this destiny to him, that he's going to be the one to hold off the apocalypse. Being willing to play with those ideas can certainly freshen this up.
The big thing that I would warn players about doing is always keep in mind, whenever your storyteller brings in something like this, they bring it in with intention. This is a character now that is absolutely prone to being a glass menagerie figure. And if your storyteller seems to just be bringing this a character like this in for that glass menagerie effect, call them out on it. Like, respectfully, of course, but call them out on it for doing that. That said, storytellers still have the ability, the rights, the capability, whatever, however you want to phrase it, to potentially subvert your expectations, particularly with something like this. We talked about how King Albrecht's not that smart, King Albrecht always wins in a fight, and all of these stories and all of these accomplishments that he has. Your storyteller can absolutely either have a different interpretation from what you're running with, or is doing something intentionally different in order to subvert the story in some way, because they feel that Albrecht is useful for this. Now, I'm going to tell you, some people can feel that this is a little jarring, particularly when you're bringing in such a big figure on this, if the storyteller seems to be running against your preconceived notion. But for the sake of your table, you should always trust that your storyteller is doing something with intention. If they're doing something poorly, that's where that critique comes in. That's where you can sit there and try to encourage them to be better about it. Nobody wants a DMPC, particularly one that powerful, showing up.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, if Albrecht comes in and is, like, actually surprisingly smart and seems to know strategy, despite what the lore tells about him, your storyteller did that for a reason. Trust that they did that for a reason. React appropriately, but trust that your storyteller did that for a reason. All right. With that said, storytellers, your players have the right to react however the fuck they want. Doesn't matter who you bring in, especially with King Albrecht. If you bring in King Albrecht and you're expecting your players to suddenly just, oh my god, it's King Albrecht! No. I'm just going to tell you, no. Do not impose how your players feel about an NPC onto them. Take what they have, take what they give you, and run with it.
Yeah, this is one of those thorny bushes with having all of this lore. It's one thing if you've got a homebrew campaign where you've got this sept and you made up all these NPCs and, you know, you want to be explicit about what they've done because the players from the same sept, they know what Cloud Chaser, the Elder, blah, 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 has done, what have you. It's another thing when you've got all of this stuff written down in books 20 years ago that a player is going to look at and go, this is canon, I'm going to bring it in, and then you completely pull the rug out from under them. So, yeah, again, be respectful on both ends. Players to the storyteller that they don't have to play this 100% the way it's written in the book, that there's room to wiggle. But again, for storytellers, if your player thinks that King Albrecht is a dum-dum, himbo guy, and he has this great idea, then the player is justified in saying, nah, he stole that from someone. He's plagiarizing someone. He's plagiarizing Evan.
Mm-hmm.
He's plagiarizing his packmate. Like, that's not his idea. And, you know, maybe be willing to roll with that.
Yeah, that's kind of where I find bringing in canon material is always the most contentious, is when people have different interpretations regarding the material, because the material allows for that. And suddenly people get very possessive of their interpretation.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to be willing to run with possible subversions. You need to be willing to run with just different interpretations with that whole deal. Your players are not obliged to respect even King Albrecht. Also, the players, you're not obliged to tell your storyteller how to properly run King Albrecht either.
So the one last thing I want to talk about is, you know, I'm super eager to just roll around in the mud of the tribes and what they mean. And King Albrecht does a sort of thing. You know, we've talked about him as a himbo, just kind of falling face forward into plot. But he does have a very interesting relationship with Falcon. Falcon comes up several times within his story. Falcon saves him once in the story. But
plot armor!
Right, yeah, exactly. But his most iconic plot is the pursuit of the Silver Crown, which is this legendary fetish that...
It will melt the head of the unworthy!
Yes, if someone unworthy puts it on, it'll, like, burn into their skull and kill them. But on the head of someone worthy, it can rally the entire nation behind you. So it's got some serious Mjolnir, Thor, Marvel vibes going behind it. You know, only the worthy can wield it. But he goes to pursue this and just constantly falls face forward into it. He never actually gets it first. Like, other people trick him to chasing after it, and they take it first, and the worm gets it. And, of course, the worm creature puts it on his head, and it burns into his skull. But King Albrecht, when he puts this on, has the ability to issue an edict that no one can refuse. And this is super interesting, because the figure that he is engaging with, well, the figures, are a bunch of black spiral dancers and worm creatures, and a fallen Garu. Not Dance the Spiral yet, but just super corrupted. And he tells the corrupted Garu to go back to Russia, you're exiled, get out of New York, get out of the U.S.
I think this is when you officially called him a himbo when you reread that.
Yeah, it's really weird. So this dude who has, you know, sided with Black Spiral Dancers and tricked King Albrecht into finding the crown and wanted it for himself, all this stuff, he just gets exiled. But all of the Black Spiral Dancers that are with him, he tells them to go back to the hive they came from and kill everyone. Just genocide that hive. And this is a real small brain move, isn't it? This is kind of weird. This is his big, iconic moment. It feels weird that the dude who is fallen but didn't dance is just exiled. Like, he's never gonna do anything bad again? Oh my gosh.
This is not a lore video, we swear.
But I'm getting to something here. But, you know, in our last episode, we talked about Black Spiral Dancers, those born in the hives. Those who haven't had a say, it's just you're born into this world. They have to go back and kill everyone they know! Their mother, their father, their brother, their sisters, their siblings! Everyone, just kill them all!
I think what Ryan is saying is this is probably a good time to offer up a potential subversion or critique, depending on what angle you are coming at Albrecht in.
Well, remember, like, this is his most... this is his, like, I have become rank 6 moment, right? This is huge. And so as a storyteller, I would be really careful about how you do this. Because, yeah, the oral tradition is the oral tradition. But some things, especially recent things, can get preserved in this. And so, yeah, he does this. And after he issues that command, Falcon speaks to him and says, that command you gave was the test to determine if you're worthy to wear this crown. The crown, in fact, has no authority to dictate anything to the Garu. This was just a test, and you passed. And so I think this is super wild to think about. Falcon here is saying that the idea is that you are a hero, not a king, right? You're worthy in that heroic sense, but not worthy enough to boss everyone around. Again, getting back to how you as a player should conceptualize King Albrecht as a leader of the group you are a part of. But using this to inform your ideas about the Silver Fang, what do they mean? How fuck off powerful is Falcon that he can do this? Like, all these fucking high-ranking BSDs just went and killed everyone they know and then themselves. Like, that is wild. That is wild. And what does this mean in terms of looking at leadership within the Garou Nation, right? That this figure isn't supposed to boss you around. They're so worthy of leadership that you should fall in with them. Michael Jordan is so good at basketball that you should just fall in behind him. He's going to bring you victory. And as much as you'd want to shit on that, like, I am, like, baffled at that decision, right? But I can't deny that it happened. Falcon did this. King Albrecht did this. And he's a legend. Like, it doesn't have to make sense. He's a protagonist. You have to accept that it happened. You can be bewildered by it. You can think that maybe it's even worse, right?
This than feels being more bossy. Like you just ranting about this piece of lore that baffles you.
It is baffling, but I think there's something really interesting to grapple onto that with. That the reason that they're in charge is kind of intangible. Like, stuff happens, and it works, and it all plays out in the end, and that's why you should get behind them, because Falcon did this what-the-fuck thing. How did it happen? What are the mechanics of it? And so to kind of go back to everything I was saying about dots on his sheet, it's all irrelevant. It doesn't matter that, you know, he only has 4 dodge. He's beat the shit out of everything that he's ever fought against. He's got that plot armor. He's gonna win the fight. Like, using that as a way to kind of put a keystone on the arch that is the Silver Fang. That it doesn't have to make sense. It's inexplicable, but goddamn, it just works. And I think that's an interesting way to kind of roll around in the mud with what the Silver Fang are. I remember when we were talking about the Shadow Lords, you know, one of the things I mentioned in the books is that they're usually content to be the voice behind the throne, because when the Silver Fang talk, knees tremble. Like, it doesn't make sense why they have this protagonist feature. They just do, and to work with that. You can manipulate them. You can give them the big brain ideas that they can act on. In fact, in that sense, you can kind of tell them what to do and just trust in their protagonist plot armor to make things happen. But it's a really cool way to look at them when, you know, so many of us, myself included, are conditioned with that the Ventru are in charge, the pompous Ventru bastards looking down their nose at you, blah, blah, blah. Like, as an easy way to break that, I think, look at King Albrecht not as this fantastic leader who's got a solution to every problem, but as someone who can't be fucking beat in a straight-on fight and just stumbles his way to victory.
This information feels more apt to for understanding King Albrecht if he never shows up in your campaign.
Sure. But, like, when Harry Potter casts a beam at Voldemort and they clash in the middle like in every frickin' movie and they're, like, wavering back and forth, the Silver Fang's beam is gonna push back harder because you're a Silver Fang. You've got the heart of a hero. Like, I think that it's a useful way to think about King Albrecht and, by extension, the Silver Fang as a whole.
I totally get what you're saying. I'm just enjoying your rant mode right now. But, yeah. Hopefully you were able to get something out of this episode. Rather, it's from, hey, storytellers, players, here's how to interact with this NP should he ever show up, or should it be just all the lore given in this non-lore video?
I said we would touch on the lore, and we did. But I spent most of my time talking about...
I think you went more comprehensively into the lore than most people go into the lore.
Well, you need context. The devil's in the details. And if the Silverfang are your devils, then you need them details.
That is fair. Yeah. That is fair, Mr. Bonar.
Yep.
You are aware of who your devils are.
I think I made this nuanced, right? I'm not just totally shitting on him. Like, he does have inexplicable plot armor. He doesn't know what he's doing. He just stumbles forward and gets tricked and manipulated constantly, but he comes out on top because he's a Silverfang. Mm-hmm. He's a hero! He's a hero in the end. Like, you can hate him for not having, you know, five brain cells together operating at the same time, but damn it all, his stupid beam still beats Voldemort's stupid beam, and so he beats Voldemort, and he's the protagonist winner. Like, you can hate him, but he's on your team and he's scoring the points.
All of you who listen to this, find your favorite anime or whatever, and replace the protagonist with illustrations of King Albrecht. Please
Look,
do this.
I know I've been using a lot of Harry Potter references, but really I'm not a big Potter head. I am a big wrestling fan, and wrestling is full of these types. Hulk Hogan, John Cena, Roman Reigns now, Brock frickin' Lesnar in his stupid Jimmy John shorts. Like, these these dudes who are just the best. And you don't fuck with Superman because he's gonna win. Batman's smarter, but Superman still just, he wins. And even if you doomsday him, he goes into a healing coma and comes out again. Like, you can't kill him. Like, ugh.
This said, this does bring up an interesting topic to me then, which is, what if you want to subvert expectations with King Albrecht by actually turning him into a villain? With that, that is definitely a tread carefully situation. Because, like Ryan said, these are... He is kind of like Superman. He is absolutely somebody who is up for subversion and interpretation and undercutting. But you need to understand what makes him special.
Mm-hmm.
And for a lot of people, it is that ray of hope or ray of light that he offers to players. There's a reason why the example I gave for introducing him to players that do not know is to introduce him in that sort of heroic, uplifting manner, because he's important to players from that extent. So that's one of those things where it's like, if you want to bring in a nastier interpretation, rather you're a storyteller who wants to recast him as a villain, rather you are a player that wants to do nothing but shit on him all the time, understand that when you get this high, this is important. And to take those things into consideration, take all those possible interpretations into consideration when drafting your character, when bringing him in as a storyteller. You can draft your character to absolutely be a disrespectful to King Albrecht shit. And your storyteller, I will reinforce this again, roll with that. But, players, be respectful to players that do have that sort of worship of King Albrecht, because that is a valid interpretation to have as well. It's not only valid, but it's enforced.
Yeah. Like, it's not perfect, and that's good.
Mm-hmm.
But you gotta admit that John Cena just wins every match. He's just gonna win in the end. He might lose at SummerSlam, but he'll win at WrestleMania. Because he's Superman. It's what he does. Like, and be aware of that.
Mm-hmm. Be aware that that's important to people. Because people may see him as that ray of light or hope in the dark and dour situation.
Because, yeah, this isn't, you know, being a fan of sports entertainment. As a Garou, this is everything. And the fact that this dude always wins in the end, always triumphs when it matters, that matters. And you can think he's a dumb himbo, but at the end of the day, he wins. And that's important. And so, yeah, your opinion of King Albrecht can't be 100%, he's a pile of trash, fuck him. At that point, I kind of have to wonder if you are corrupted by the worm.
Mm-hmm. And like, yeah,
you can hate him, but...
And yeah, I'm not going to say, storytellers, that it's impossible to introduce King Albrecht as a villain. But there are appropriate ways to do that. Rather, it is going, per se, like, the Invincible route, where, yes, you have your corrupted King Albrecht, but guess what? Here is the ray of sunshine and light that actually stands for what people appreciate about the character that will help the players triumph if it's not the players themselves. Again, using Albrecht to uplift, no matter how you choose to bring him in. You use him as a tool to uplift.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, like, canonically, King Albrecht gets manipulated all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So if you wanted him as a villain, I would think, have the players conflicting with an actual villain.
Yeah.
And the villain scheme is to manipulate Albrecht into doing something villainous.
Yeah.
That is a lot more interesting,
mm-hmm.
I think. And, of course, you know, let the players actually stop the manipulation effect.
Mm-hmm.
What a cool way to interact with fucking Superman.
Yeah.
Is to save him from being manipulated. Because you can't kill him.
And this doesn't stop people, this doesn't stop players from having Batman be their favorite superhero as opposed to Superman.
Right.
It just gets to mean that Superman is still Superman.
Yeah. You don't have a contingency for when King Albrecht tries to kill all the Garu, you have a contingency for when, not if, but when King Albrecht gets manipulated by the worm again. Not corrupted, just manipulated.
Mm-hmm. All right. So with that, hopefully, again, you found something useful.
Or at the very least, it was fun.
Yeah, you just had fun listening to Ryan rant. I certainly did. Again, I kind of want to see now the fan art of people putting King Albrecht in various, like, their favorite protagonist of their favorite shows. Who do you know has plot armor in your favorite show? It's Albrecht now!
Yeah. I really can't think.
Put an eye patch on them. It makes it Albrecht. So with that, hopefully y'all had fun, and we will see you next time.